This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be about the right to be forgotten. I am here with barrister Miss Melissa Stock from Normanton Chambers in London. Melissa is a specialist barrister in data protection and GDPR law, and she is certified by the International Association of Privacy Professionals in European data law. Melissa advises and represents individuals, companies and public bodies and non-governmental organisations in all areas of privacy and data protection. Thank you so much for joining me, Melissa.
Thank you for having me, Hattie.
On our Zoom recording, I keep forgetting to say that, but that's how life is these days. So it's very efficient, though. I'm not complaining, as I was mentioning earlier. Right. The right to be forgotten. Interesting area of law, and I think one that is probably becoming a more topical subject as people start to realise that the internet, and particularly places like platforms like Google, are holding information on people to do with forever. Whatever you've ever put on there can come up in some form. So let's talk about what we mean by the right to be forgotten, the right to erasure, as it's also known as. Please, Melissa.
So the right to be forgotten came from a judgment in Europe's highest court. The ruling was made in 2014 and caused a big stir in data privacy. It was the first time that a search engine had been found to be a data controller for showing personal data in its search results, and it created this new data privacy right. Now, the background to the case that created this right is that a man called Mario Costeja Gonzalez wanted Google to remove a search result that came up when his name was typed into Google, and it was a link to a newspaper article about debt proceedings against him that was from 1998 and had since been resolved. Google refused, and he complained to his data supervisory authority, who agreed with him and challenged Google's decision not to de-link the search result. Google argued that it wasn't in control of that data. That data was in the control of the newspaper publisher. However, the court disagreed and found that because Google's search engine organizes and decides how data appears in its results, that it is in control of the data. And it commented that Google is able to significantly increase the exposure of a person beyond that which individual websites publishing information can do. So for the first time, individuals are now able to request that search engines de-link search results against their name.
It's very interesting, I think, Melissa, because I have to say that, you know, Google has become a place where I certainly go and look for as much information as I can source on variety of things, whether it's shopping or statistics or general things. And it does hold a hell of a lot of information on a lot of things. I mean, anything you Google at the bottom, it used to be 1.something, 2.something million results. Now the numbers are beyond even billions, which is really interesting. Okay, so now that we've left the EU, does this mean the right is not available to UK citizens anymore because the UK is not part of the EU?
The GDPR has in effect been incorporated into UK data protection law. So whilst there are some permitted variations from the GDPR itself and some amendments that have been made by the data protection, privacy and electronic EU exit regulations, the right to be forgotten remains part of our law. There are some issues that could arise later. For example, there could be divergence in how the UK courts interpret the right to be forgotten compared with the Court of Justice of the European Union. But for all intents and purposes, the right to be forgotten will continue to exist in the UK.
That's very good to hear, I have to say. I mean, you mentioned the GDPR laws, and we have done podcasts, haven't we, Melissa, that have been published on GDPR. So our listeners can go back and listen to those where we explain GDPR in a little bit more detail. But in 2019, Google won a dispute in the EU's court that Google does not have to apply the right to be forgotten globally, and that meant that Google only had to remove links from search results in Europe and not elsewhere. So even though we're not in Europe anymore, our GDPR laws still protect us to a large degree with the rules on the right to be forgotten and your right to request the right to be forgotten in certain circumstances. Is that what we're saying?
Yes, I mean, there are some limiting factors in the application of the right to be forgotten that people need to understand. There is a difference between delisting and erasure, which I can go on to in a little bit. But when you make a delisting request, so you apply to Google to delist something, and let's say it agrees to do so, it's important to understand that that delisting of information is against your name. So if you were to put in a different search, something else in the search function that isn't your name, it doesn't mean that that information still won't appear just under a different input or into the search function. Right. So whilst you put in your name, it doesn't come up. It doesn't mean that if you put in the circumstance or the facts surrounding that information, that information won't appear. And again, as you say, there was a ruling such that when you request for a delisting and it is approved, that delisting applies to the local domain. So it'll be .co.uk, but that information against your name could still appear if you were to put it into google.com, for example.
God, I tell you, this stuff doesn't, it's not easy, is it? It does get complicated, and we are trying to keep it as simple as we can so that everybody, including myself, can understand it. Let's talk about some examples of the kind of things that people can have delisted. And I know that the Information Commissioner's Office, also known as the ICO, has stated lots of key points where individuals have the right to have their personal data erased. But let's just mention some of the key points here, the kind of examples on that.
So it applies to personal data. So it's personal data that can be requested to be erased or delinked. Now, we have spoken in a previous podcast, I think part one of the GDPR, about what is personal data. And it is given a broad definition in data protection and is basically any information that identifies a living individual. So you can request that, for example, your name, your email address, your personal address is erased or delisted. But it also includes identifiers such as IP addresses or MAC addresses. Common things that people request are erased or delisted are photographs, online newspaper articles that mention or reveal information about them, references to past criminal conviction, potentially comments on websites or reports of involvement in legal proceedings, things like that.
It goes on and on the list, I think. I mean, you know, because I've certainly seen some historical information about me come up onto Google where I thought, oh, that's interesting. How did that even get there? But it was an advertisement that I put in a newspaper that popped up. And I thought, goodness gracious, you know, these things do have a way of finding themselves through. But I mean, one of the a few of the reasons where you can sit there and say, well, actually, this is why it should be deleted is if the personal data is no longer necessary for the purpose which you originally collected or processed it for. So as you say, it could have been an advertisement for something, I don't know, that you're looking to sell or buy. Or a service that you were looking for that you no longer need, and you can say, well, that's no longer required anymore, it's no longer relevant, so I'd like that deleted. And also, if, for example, you're relying on if the company is relying on your lawful consent and you withdraw that consent, I mean, that's quite broad, isn't it? And a company in their small print will argue lots and lots of things. But also, it says, and this is on the ICO website, when you're data is being processed for direct marketing purposes and you object to that. I mean, so many of us have direct marketing every day. I mean, it's on emails, it's from text messages, it comes in so many different shapes and forms. But they are just some of the reasons why you can say, well, actually, I don't want that information to come up anymore on you know, a random search.
There are, yes, as you say, I mean, there are grounds to make such a request, which are in Article 17. I mean, it's the starting point really is to understand the difference between the delisting of information and the erasure of information. So it is somewhat confusing because the phrase the right to be forgotten has been adopted as a catch-all term.
Yes.
It wasn't actually used by the court in its judgment, but was made in submissions, and yet the GDPR uses the terminology. So Article 17 of the GDPR is called the right to erasure, and then the right to be forgotten appears in brackets. I think it is easier to think of the concept in two separate categories. So the right to delist on the one hand and the right to erasure on the other. The right to delist is the application of the right to be forgotten specifically to search engines or any organization that indexes personal data or collates it from other sources. So these are information, organizations, that cannot delete the source of the data, whoever is publishing it, but can remove it from their own index or algorithm so that it no longer appears to the public through their service. So that information will still appear at its source unless the person also makes a separate erasure request. Now, the right to erasure in Article 17 differs from delisting in that it applies to any organization that holds or processes the personal data. So this applies where the organization itself is able to erase the data. And a request can be made for that personal data to be erased subject to the exceptions in the Data Protection Act 2018 and the GDPR.
So just so that I've kind of got that right in my head, Melissa, are we saying that applying to be delisted is literally more so to the platform that it's coming up on, i.e. like Google, you're asking Google to delist it, don't show it anymore, don't link that in anybody's search, but applying for the right to be forgotten or the right for, you know, for erasure is you're applying to the company that actually produces the information as well, where it actually becomes deleted at source. So that, as you mentioned earlier, if somebody types in any circumstances around that search, it won't show up, regardless of your name being there or not.
Yes, exactly. It's the way to think of it is when you want something to be removed, is this an organization that is actually publishing the data? I mean, is it just making public a report that was written by someone else or comes from another website, or is it itself the creator of it? So, as you say, Google will list various links to various websites, so it can de-link that, but the information will still appear on the original website unless you make an application. Now, the GDPR does include provision that once you've made this request, the controller of your data has to inform other controllers. But you know, even if they do so, there's no guarantee that the other controllers will delete or delist the information. So in practical terms, you would then have to go on and see where else the data is that you want it to be removed. It really depends.
It could be a long chain of events. Yes. As you're speaking, I'm thinking, goodness gracious, yes. Because what we do have in this day and age is one website will publish something and then another website could have referred to that in some shape or form. Another website could have taken elements and segments of that and published it in a different format, whether it's somebody personally rehashing what's being said. I mean, with all this hashtag stuff that goes on all the time, and you know, social media is just wild and vast, it could come up in various forms because it's been dotted on the internet in so many different ways.
It also depends on what the effect is. I mean, it's the reason why you want this information erased. You know, it could be that one data controller, their publication of it is causing you the most problems. And, you know, the fact that it's linked to another website that's also publishing it, that other website, you know, people aren't really looking at it. That's not really the source of the problem. So it really will depend upon the motivations behind the delisting request or the erasure request. Not that you have to have a reason. That's not one of the prerequisites for making a right to be forgotten request. But it does feed into sort of the approach that you take to getting this data erased or delisted.
How does somebody apply for to be delisted or for the right to be forgotten?
So if it's a request to delist, then most search engine operators or online platforms, particularly the big ones, will have a process, and you can usually find that on their websites. If the situation is not a delisting, but straightforward erasure, then you would make a request either via a process that they indicate on their website, or you would write to them making a request under Article 17 of the GDPR, which is incorporated into UK law in the Data Protection Act 2018. Now, how you approach a request will depend on the reasons I just outlined. It may be that there is information available that is having a particular effect and you know where the source of it is. I don't know, maybe Google, it's a search result on Google that's number one and it's causing particular problems. Perhaps it reveals where you live. Perhaps it reveals something you just don't want people to know and you want to remain private. And then you know where to go to request that it's delisted. But it may be that there is a particular effect that some information is having, but you don't know where the source is. And this can be a much more difficult task because you may, for example, I mean, this is sort of a very extreme example, but maybe somebody is harassing you or stalking you. Or, you know, it's clear that somehow...
Or being malicious, maybe putting out information that's not correct, being malicious, and you're like, I want to stop this being there because it's
thinking
not true.
More, but then you would know where the source of it is. You would certainly know if it's on a platform or somewhere. But sometimes, you know, I have clients that there are effects that are more in the real world, but they don't know where it's coming from. They don't know how people are finding out this information. And so it very much depends on your motivation for the request. What is it causing to you? It might be you just don't like the idea of an organization having your data and you just want it deleted, and that is your right as well. So how you approach the request will depend on your situation.
You said something very interesting there, because the default position in my mind was that actually you have to have a reason to request the information to be removed, and I mentioned some of the information, the key points that the ICO have mentioned on their website as reasons to request, but you're saying actually you don't have to outline a big reason or a reason of why you want it to removed. It can just be your request: I would like this removed, please.
Yes, and there has to be there's a process, so you have to have a ground to make the request, but you don't have to have a motivation. You know, you don't have to say, I want this deleted because I just don't like it. You know, that isn't a prerequisite. It might be the motivation, but it's not something the organization can't turn around and say, well, you haven't told us why, so we don't have to do it. But you do have to come under one of the grounds. So the process of applying has essentially two parts. There are grounds under which a request may be made, and these are found in Article 17, subsection 1. And if you don't come under one of these grounds, then you cannot apply. And you've mentioned a few of them earlier, and I won't go into each ground in detail, but I want to highlight two. One is where it is no longer necessary for the organisation to process your personal data. And this supports the data protection principle of purpose limitation and data minimisation. So that is, organisations should not keep data or use data for longer than is necessary for the stated purpose. Now, they may contend that it is still necessary and give reasons for it, but if it isn't necessary, then that is one of the grounds. And another ground, which I think I mentioned to you in our first podcast together, Hattie, is where the data was collected by what is called an information society service when you were a child.
I've not even heard of that. What's
that? We talked about it very briefly. So an information society service is the sort of legal definition, but basically it applies to most online services such as websites, mobile phone applications, video platforms. And if a child gives their personal data to such organisations, then they are able under this ground to request that it is deleted. So that is one of the grounds within Article 17. And this includes when you reach adulthood. So you're an adult, there is data that personal data that a platform has that you put on there when you were a child. And one of the grounds is, that's one of the grounds that you can make a request. Now, an organisation that receives a request can say either that the ground for making a request isn't fulfilled, and again, I won't go into in detail, but there are certain arguments that can be made, or they can rely on a list of what I call exemptions. And these exemptions are listed in Article 17 as well. They're quite restrictive, and they aren't going to be easily relied upon by organisations to refuse. More likely that they'll say ground isn't made out. But the most commonly relied upon will most likely be the right to freedom of expression, and the fifth exemption on the list, which is to keep a record in the case of legal claims. And there are also exemptions found in the Data Protection Act. So the vast majority of public sector departments are excluded from erasure requests. So, for example, in immigration, crime, it won't be possible to ask that your personal data is deleted.
So I was actually going to ask, can an organisation refuse to erase or delist someone's personal information? And I think we've answered it there, haven't we, where we've said, yes, they can. And they can use a list of exceptions, which are part of the law, and part of the GDPR laws as well, to say why they have actually refused your request. But so let's try and answer as best as we can in the time that we have. How does someone challenge that decision by an organisation to refuse to erase or delete someone, Melissa? What would be the initial steps you think that could work?
So if an organisation refuses, you have quite limited options, really. I mean, the first is to make a request to the Information Commission, the ICO, to investigate that decision. And that can take time, and you may not get an immediate answer. Or to bring a claim in the civil courts against the organisation. I mean, those are not, you know, it's not ideal when you have information out there that, you know, you just quite simply just want it to be deleted, and then you have to go through this rather lengthy process.
And costly. Yeah.
But unfortunately, that is where we are. In many respects, it's easiest if it is a delisting request, because then you just go to Google. There's the online forms that you fill in, you know, or let's say whatever platform. It is a bit more straightforward because they have this process in place. Whereas it's much more difficult when you are making an erasure request to smaller organizations or other organizations, because if, you know, on the receiving end of that, they either don't understand their data protection obligations, or they're just resistant, then the next part of it is to go to the ICO, who are, you know, already under considerable pressure. Or you have to go to the courts and request the organisation to delete
it. The Information Commissioner's Office probably acts a bit like the Ombudsman does in other areas of law, where you can bring a complaint to an independent body who will look into whether the decision by the company that has been made is fair, reasonable and in line with the law, and whether your arguments can be or should be held up, or actually whether, you know, they can't be held up.
Yes, I mean, the difference is, I suppose, that, you know, if you complain to the ICO, the ICO investigates, the ICO gets access to the documents and can look through and say, okay, we agree or we disagree. I mean, that's what happened in the Google Spain judgment that led to the right being created, is that the Data Supervisory Authority in Spain agreed and upheld Mr. Gonzalez's application, and then they went to took Google to court and said, no, you have to delist it. So it's helpful if, you know, your supervisory authority then supports you, and then they take it further forward. But that's not going to happen in every circumstance. And, you know, if you are saying, well, you know, I disagree, the problem is you don't necessarily know, you don't have enough information to work with. Often what people will do before they make a request for erasure is that they will make a subject access request to find out, first of all, what personal data is held and on what basis it is being used by the organisation, because that will help when you're looking at the grounds in Article 17 and when the organisation perhaps comes back and says no, because this ground isn't made out. It gives you a much better position to understand how they are applying that ground to the facts of your situation.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, as much as legal advice can be very, very costly, if it's something that's so important and so imperative to you and you don't want to go and read Article 17, you don't, or you're reading it and you're not quite getting it, you're not quite understanding the legalities around it, And the company have completely refused your delisting or erasure request, then it may be advisable to take just a snippet of legal advice, you know, to say, this is what I requested, this is the grounds they refused me on, do I have grounds to appeal this decision and take it to the ICO? Because then you can save yourself time, perhaps, if your legal advice at that point is, look, you really, really don't have any legal basis to persist with this request, and the company that you're requesting it from is actually in a position to say, we don't have to do it, then you could save yourself a lot of time. That's all we've got time for. Melissa, thank you ever so much for your time today.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure to record with you again, and I know there'll be some interesting topics surrounding this that we will look to record again in the future. So thank you once again.
Welcome.
What I'll say to our listeners is, don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts, and you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.